Guru Nation, welcome to episode 807 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I go solo and discuss the only things to focus on as a site owner. So everything else, at least initially, one can argue is distraction, and I certainly make that argument. So hopefully you figure out something here if you're a site owner, if you're someone that wants to be a site owner, if you're someone that's curious about it, check it out. Really quick shout out to my sponsors, Inato. Inato, as a site owner, Inato is a place I go to constantly for study opportunities. And I don't actually pay anything, it's completely free. And the way it works is that they get all their money from sponsors. So they don't get involved in the budget or contract or anything like that. It's amazing tool. You don't always get the studies you want, and you do need therapeutic area expertise, but it's free and you can't beat that. If you do need help, more hand holding, and maybe delve into some areas about therapeutic expertise if you don't have it, my consulting firm DSCS Sweat Equity and Investments can help. Low monthly fee. Reach out to me in the text, let me know. But in either case, Inato's link is in the show notes, and you can text me 949-415-6256. Last sponsor is Creo. Creo is like the control center for my site. Actually, think I bring it up in this episode, and I bring up Inato, but Creo has the CTMS, the eSource, the eReg, the eSignatures, the patient database, the auto texting. It even has a business development arm that they're developing, and they're always releasing new things. So check out Creo in the show notes as well, and hopefully enjoy this episode on site ownership.
Today's episode is going to be about the four things research site owners need to focus on. These are the four fundamental things. Let's break them all down to first principles, because everything else is a distraction. But these four things, this is what you need as a research site in today's day and age. So it is patient recruitment. It is physician outreach. It is getting studies for your site, and it is managing your site operations, which, yes, includes finance. So let's break these things down one at a time. Patient recruitment. You absolutely need to have multiple, not just one, multiple ways of getting patients. The best way, of course, is your PI's, hopefully, your PI's private practice. And hopefully, you have more than one PI with multiple private practices, like we do here in Yuma Clinical Trials. We have five different PIs, and each have their own private practice independent of one another. And each can serve as a patient database for our studies. And what's even cooler is there's a lot of crossover between. So a lot of these studies are getting complex, and they, like, the specialists are actually treating the patients with the latest, like, modern treatments. But sometimes the internal medicine don't. And for these stricter inclusion-exclusion criteria, where the study may say, hey, patients should not have ever taken this particular drug. Usually it's something like a monoclonal antibody. There's a lot of research going on with the mAbs, monoclonal antibodies. The dermatologist, they're on it, right? So they already, as soon as the patient has symptoms, boom, they already prescribe a monoclonal antibody, which means bad for us. We can't screen those patients because they want usually monoclonal antibody naive. And this is just one example. There's hundreds of these restrictions. But if you have another practice, usually internal medicine are a little slower to give the latest treatments. So they go more like tried and true old-fashioned treatment. So you'll get some of the, in this case, monoclonal antibody naive, which the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's something that happened recently in one of my trials. So multiple private practices, if possible. At least one. At least have your PI or your sub-I's private practice to choose from. And then it's going to lead us into community outreach for physicians, which we will get into. But let's stick to the patient recruitment first. Okay, so the patient recruitment. Number one, I think this is going to take care of 80% of your enrollment, is the PI's private practice. Now, physician referrals, we're going to get to that later. A second stream of patient recruitment can be advertising. Every budget, every contract, you should be negotiating an advertising fee. You could get anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000, depending on what your plan is and what you're actually doing as far as advertising for your study. If you need help, if you need a turnkey solution, we actually developed one that's built for sites. My site uses it. It's called Patient Ace, and we don't have a website yet. I don't think we're still in beta mode as of April 3rd, 2024. But if you're watching, just reach out to me and say, hey, I saw your podcast or I listened to your podcast about patient recruitment. I want to learn more. I'm happy to introduce you to our co-founder, the genius behind this, Ronick. It's worked really well for me. Yes, of course, it's not as good as getting patients from your PI's private practice, but it's surprisingly easy. Each time I look at my phone, because we're running ads on Facebook and Instagram right now, we have a new lead and we're spending like minimal money, like $5 to $10 a day on those platforms. And we are getting 3 to 6 leads a day, of which one may screen at some point. And of which like half of them, or in some studies, 25% of those will actually randomize. But over time, it's a good supplement to a private practice. Another thing you should be doing is focusing on building a brand for your site. And this is something that you can actually do for free. I mean, if you have an extra budget, you can hire someone like Daniel, like we did at Yuma Clinical Trials, where every month we interview a community leader or a business leader or somebody that we think is interesting in the community. And there's no agenda. We're promoting them. So we'll do a podcast just like this, usually 20 to 30 minutes in length, where me or one of my coordinators sits down with this business person and we just talk about their business, not about ours. The only thing is, in the beginning, we say, hey, we run studies. If you're interested, text this number. And then on YouTube, when we put on YouTube and Instagram, we have the same call to action. Text this number if you're interested in our studies. Here's a link to our guest's website. And that's worked surprisingly well. One of our best ones that we've done, by far our best one, is this nail salon owner in our building. And they actually share the building with us at Yuma Clinical Trials, and they're a nail salon. Apparently, they're really popular. It got 100x, like 100, it's in a month, it got like over 100,000 views on Instagram, and people have been reaching out, following us, and wanting to learn more. Those are planting seeds. Those are building your brand. No sites do this. I think it's important that you start doing this, because you'll thank yourself 3 years later, 5 years later. So, PI database, get some kind of advertising, start building your online brand for your site with Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, podcast if possible. Community outreach. You need to go out to your community events, whether they're health related or not. We've gone to jazz nights, outdoor jazz nights here in Yuma. We've gotten patients, or at least we've gotten patient leads so far. We've gone to farmers markets. We've gone to health fairs. We're going to be doing some other type of events, like open houses in our office or at our site's parking lot, where we're going to have a taco truck, a bartender, and do like a happy hour for the community. And you should, I mean, kill two birds with one stone. You should film that as well and put that as part of your branding also. So patient recruitment, super important. If you think you already have enough patients, think again. These studies are tough. So let's say you get a depression study. I'm just talking from like what's most recently the case at my site. There's a depression study that we're currently doing. We have about an 80% screen fail rate. That means for every 10 patients we screen, only 2 will randomize. But we expect all 10 of those to randomize, and we're only getting 2. So regardless of your expectations, and you may not have that high of a screen fail rate, but it's not all that uncommon, you're going to need more patients than you think you do, because these studies are, the inclusion-exclusion criteria is increasingly more complex. So really figure out your patient recruitment strategy, and don't forget about patient retention as well once they're in. You want to make sure, one of my last videos I talked about walking the patient through the screening visit, being in communication with them until they randomize, and then even beyond. Make sure that they're entering their data in their diaries. Make sure you're communicating with them so that the patient doesn't get frustrated and quit. Second thing you need to do. So remember at the beginning of this video, I said there's 4 things you need to do as a site owner. The first one's patient recruitment. The second one is physician/clinician outreach and recruitment. So this kind of also falls into patient recruitment, but you want to look at it from a bigger picture. So yes, when I go out in the community, we do lunch and learns with other doctors' offices. This is why I'm not putting this tactic in patient recruitment, even though it is patient recruitment, is because I do this for physician recruitment. So we go out in the community, we do lunch and learns at different doctors' offices that we do not work with. Sometimes even the ones we do work with, because we have so many now that some of their staff forget about us. We bring lunch. Usually it's Chipotle or whatever. We can get sandwiches. And we talk for about half an hour. We bring them food and we discuss our studies. And you may get the MDs, you may get the mid-level providers like the nurse practitioners or the physician assistant. You'll get the MAs because the MAs love the food and the free stuff. And then you'll talk about the studies you have and you'll discuss. And oftentimes, like, referral fees, which are technically legal, don't even come up. But they do ask, like, well, that's interesting. Like, what's in it for us? And then we discuss, well, we do like this pre-screening fee for you. I'll bring you sheets for our studies. If you fill out these forms, basically they're doing the work of pre-screening the patients for you. We can actually compensate for this. And if we make you a sub-investigator, this could be your only task, pre-screening patients. You're actually going to have research experience. And if you ever want to start doing studies for yourself, I'm happy to come here and explain how that works. And you can do your own studies with us. And that's work. That's how I got all the rest of my 4 PIs. So I started out with one, the internal medicine. He told me to go talk to a dermatologist. This exact scenario happened. Same thing with the psychiatrist, same thing with the pulmonologist, same thing with the cardiologist. So this will work. Not everyone says yes. Not everyone's interested. Not everyone wants to do lunch and learns. Not everyone's enthusiastic. Who cares? The ones that do are the ones that matter. Of course you're going to get no's before you get yeses. Of course you're going to get more no's than you get more yeses. But clinician recruitment, not just to get patients, which spills over into patient recruitment, like I said, but to get new PIs and sub-PIs for your future studies. To me, it's a must. Every research site needs to be doing this. The next thing is getting studies. So how do you get studies for your site? There are companies like mine, DSCS. We charge a low monthly fee. Not only will we give you study leads and even recommend you for some studies that come our way and help you with the feasibilities and help you with the startup regulatory if you need help and how to complete the initial IRB applications. We'll do your contract and budget for you, which we're going to discuss last here. And we're a shoulder to cry on. I mean, myself, Chris, the rest of the team, we're constantly on call for our clients. And we're kind of building an informal site network through this. So that's a way to get more studies that you're paying, right? And ours is the lowest. Trust me, I've looked around. This is why I made it. Just same reason why we're using Patient Ace for patient recruitment. My site, Yuma Clinical Trials, is a client of ours, DSCS, that helps sites get studies, do the budgets, and I take advantage of all of these services that we offer. ClinicalTrials.gov, I've discussed this before. ClinicalTrials.gov, make it a habit to go on there and cross-reference those sponsors from ClinicalTrials.gov with the people on LinkedIn that are likely to be the decision makers of those trials. So I do this every week. I go on there through our leads we get from DSCS, but if you don't want to pay, you can do yourself on clinicaltrials.gov and then cross-reference what's new, what's interesting, who got funding, who completed a phase one study that's about to do phase two, who completed a phase two study that had positive results. That means they're going to do a phase three. You need to get strategic about how you're going to hit up these sponsors. Usually the smaller the sponsor, the better your success on LinkedIn because they have less employees. So it's easier to guess who's the appropriate person. And from my experiences, the smaller sponsors are more willing to respond on LinkedIn. But, you know, there's people like Dan Otap who came to Save Our Sites conference that was on a panel with us on industry relations. And he's from a big sponsor, Genentech, and he's very approachable. So it's not always the rule, but it definitely is like a trend. Now, here's an underrated way to get studies. It's simple, yet no one does it because it's just like working out. You got to just do it, right? It's not hard. It's not hard for me to go do pull-ups right now or go do bench press. Like, it's simple, but it's, do I do it all the time? No. And same thing with this. When you're at your physician's office, ask the MAs, ask the front desk, ask the office manager, when is the next sales rep coming? The next pharmaceutical sales rep. Please let me know. I will be here. And then you want to be there and you want to be nice. Don't be pushy. Be respectful. They're not there to see you. They're there to sell their drugs to the doctors. But, and it's even better if the doctor makes an introduction for you. Hey, this is Dan. We do research here as well. I know you're not in charge of research. You're the sales rep. And then this is where I get involved and say, yeah, I would love to discuss research opportunities with your medical science liaison. And the medical science liaison is going to be the one who's going to actually do a Zoom with you and ask you some qualification questions about your site, maybe even come to the site and do a site tour. And there's nothing guaranteed right away, but you are planting seeds for future studies 8 months from now, 12 months from now. Sometimes they are 1 month from now. I just had this happen for my pulmonologist and met with the sales rep on like the third time I went to the pulmonologist's office. They hooked me up with the medical science liaison and they offered us three studies that haven't started yet, but they're offering us three studies. So it's possible to get quick results from that too. So just make sure you're around when the sales reps are there. That's getting studies. Last way to get studies, there's probably more than these that I listed, but trying to keep the video short, is conferences. And I hate to toot my own horn, but Save Our Sites. Conferences that are site-focused. There's other good ones out there too. I think Save Our Sites is by far the best, but there's other ones where you can meet sponsors like SCRS, Scope, ACRP. By the way, I'm going to ACRP in May this year in Anaheim, May 2024. So be on the lookout for some announcements soon regarding that. Shout out to Viva Aninato for sponsoring those my appearances there. Conferences. At conferences, you meet sponsors, you meet CROs, you meet sites, you meet CRAs, you meet all kinds of interesting people that you can continue your relationships with on LinkedIn. And you can get studies that way. A good way of me getting studies is actually networking with other sites. So I've got a lot of colleagues all across the country, and I try to check in with them routinely. Hey, what are you doing? Well, someone that's really good at doing this is Rod Raphael, my colleague in Indianapolis. So if you need a buddy to share studies with, Rod Raphael is your man. Go look him up on LinkedIn. It's just how you spell it, just how it sounds is his name. But I've got colleagues in Miami, Rod in Indiana, Phoenix, Imperial, San Diego. I mean, all over LA. We've got connections, colleagues. If you start going to more conferences, you get meeting more people and ask them what they got, what you got. Today, I called my friend Judy, a colleague of mine who's a fellow Save Our Sites conference co-founder and a Latinos in Clinical Research co-founder. By the way, Latinos in Clinical Research, it's a free monthly Zoom meetup. All backgrounds welcome. You don't have to be Latino. You can get studies that way too. I asked her about a study that she has that I want, if it's worth doing. And we had a really good conversation. We're probably going to end up doing it, but it's one of the more challenging studies probably that we're going to do. But it was good to have somebody helping me out. Like, hey, this is the pain points I have. And oh, by the way we ended that call was, what kind of studies are you looking for? Let me see what I can send you. Oh, you're getting a new doctor. Let me see if I could find you some studies for him. And anything you have for me in return, it's reciprocity. So networking with sites, colleagues, developing relationships, another way to get studies. Now, operations. Last one, four. So just to do a recap, getting patients, getting clinicians, getting studies, and operations. Operations deserves its own podcast, and I will do more on it, especially on documentation. You want to make sure your operations, like not just your SOPs, but your actual operations are smooth, they're consistent, they're compliant, your staff's compliant. And I did a video where I walked through my own SOP, and it was like 70 sections. Each of those are part of your operations. But really what the operations boils down to is source, regulatory, finance, or contracts and budgets, and recruitment, and then training or onboarding. So those like five subsections of site operations is kind of what we're going to discuss today. Source, you need to make your source. You need to constantly tweak your source so that you're being compliant with it. When you are doing a study visit, you want to make sure that you are being compliant with the protocol, compliant with the GCP, and adhering to your own SOPs, and you're putting the patient's safety first. That's it. If you do all that, everyone loves you. The FDA loves you. The sponsors love you. Your PI loves you. The patients love you. If you don't do that, you're going to run into problems. And that's where you get into doing Kappa plans and having deviations. And so make sure your source is created properly. Make sure your staff is actually trained on the protocol. And the better you create your source, this is why I love Creo. We can change the source document on the spot like that. And now all the templates are changed for that study, for all the visits, future visits going forward. Within Creo, on the headers, I put like cheat sheets for the coordinators right on the top. So if you read, if we're on Creo for a particular assessment, and I know it's tricky, I'll put cheat sheets on the top of that assessment within Creo. The only way a coordinator is going to make a mistake is if they ignore what I wrote there. And now I'm trying to train my staff to help create these sources with me, and they're starting to do it. So I'm building a system. I did a whole video on building systems as well. So that's source. Also, make sure you document. Document everything, every detail, especially when there are anomalies from the visit. So we had one particular case where we were supposed to dispense 5 bottles to a patient for a visit. So our lead CRC generated the visit in IRT. It gave us the 5 kits to go dispense. So I said, I was trying to be helpful. So I went down and I was going to get all 5, but I only got 1 because my PI saw me and he called me to go look at some labs with him. So I got 1 bottle. I gave it to the patient and I said, our other CRC is going to bring you the other ones, but just hang tight. The other CRC came and he couldn't find the bottle I gave the patient. So he thought it was lost. So he found the other 4 and he gave them to the patient. I guess they didn't communicate and the patient wanted to go anyway. So the coordinators thought that we never got that 5th bottle, But I actually took it out to give it to the patient, and then I got called away. So once we discovered this discrepancy, we documented it, because the coordinators, instead of talking to me, because I think I left the site right after that, and I forgot to mention it to them. They assumed it was lost, or like we never got it. So they emailed the monitor. The monitor said, hey, it's okay. Just distribute the 4 bottles and have the patient come in a week early so they don't run out. No big deal. But now at their next visit, the patient returned all 5 bottles. And the coordinators were like, what? I thought this one was lost. And then I had to explain it. Oh, this is what happened. So we had to document it all. The bottle we thought was lost, IP number, this, and that, was actually not lost. Here's what actually happened. And I put in detail, because it was partially my error, what happened. And so document, because imagine all that going on and you don't document it. And then 3 years later, 5 years later, you get audited by a sponsor or the FDA. And they say, what happened here? No one's going to remember that. But now that it's written in the progress note, anyone can read, will understand what's going on. So I see this as a habit for sites to under-document. I think you should document more than you think you do. Regulatory. Make sure as soon as a protocol amendment occurs, you do the training log for all the relevant staff. Make sure that as soon as an informed consent amendment is approved, that at the next available visit, not the one after that, the next available visit, the patient signs the new form. Make sure you start using the new form. Big mistake I see sites make a lot. You don't want that deviation. And then make sure DOA logs and all that stuff. Obviously, I'm oversimplifying regulatory. Make sure your CLIA waivers don't expire. Make sure your GCPs, your AIDAs don't expire. There's ways you can put alerts in Creo, in Viva Site Vault, whatever e-reg system you use. Next thing, contracts and budgets. Again, I personally outsource this to a company like my own that handles contracts and budgets. But there are videos, hours of videos on how to do it. Again, network, contact, colleagues, our service pays for itself. One budget that we negotiate for you pays for our services for the rest of the year. The difference between what an amateur site will negotiate versus what we will negotiate with Chris and team, it's night and day difference, that delta. So again, shameless plug, if you need help, not just getting studies, but doing your contracts and budgets for a low monthly fee, at the time of this video, it's $1,500 a month. Reach out to me. Contracts and budgets, super important. And then also make sure your CTMS system is tied into the contract and budget, and try to find a way, and this is something I'm doing, to automate your invoicing so that, let's say, dry ice comes, right? Or a visit occurs where dry ice is needed, or an eye exam is needed, or an x-ray is needed. You should just click a button, and in Creo, you can do it this way. You click a button and an invoice is generated. Just automate your systems. This is why I love eSource and CTMS. Final thing after the budgets is the onboarding and training of staff. CRA Academy, CRC Academy, shameless plugs, but there's videos. You can develop systems. You can do your own training for your staff. How do you onboard them? On day one, they got to learn GCP. Then they got to do AIDA. Then they got to, what are you going to do? So make sure you have this. Make sure it's documented. Figure out a way to keep your staff compliant and onboard new staff as needed so that you can keep the system going. Guru Nation, this video went on longer than I thought, and my voice is running out. But like, subscribe, comment, share. Bye-bye. Hey, if you guys like that kind of content, make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share. Stay tuned for more videos.